Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, Germany. Coming up on the program, rebels in South Sudan deny a UN report that says they killed hundreds of civilians after taking control of the oil-rich town of Bentiu.
Not true. Our forces did not kill civilians. If there were some of the civilians killed at all, this could have been crossfire.
The International Police Interpol, in collaboration with police from countries in the Central African region, step up efforts to fight the dumping of electronic gadgets in Africa.
A computer is made up of about 1,000 elements. Those 1,000 elements are all toxic. When it is dumped, these substances are washed off by rainwater. It filters into the water system, and people carry the water and drink.
We will also be hearing from a parent of one of the abducted girls in Nigeria, appealing to the Boko Haram Islamists to free his daughter. Stay tuned.
Top story.
Rebels in South Sudan have denied a UN report that says they killed hundreds of civilians after taking control of the oil hub Bentiu last week. Human rights investigators from the United Nations mission in South Sudan, ANMI, said that opposition forces killed hundreds of South Sudanese and foreign civilians after determining their ethnicity or nationality when they captured the town. From Nairobi, James Shimanyula reports.
Speaking to me exclusively by telephone from an undisclosed location on the outskirts of Bentiu, James Gadet Dak, spokesman for rebel leader Riek Machar, denied that rebels killed more than 200 civilians there, as claimed by the United Nations.
This is not true. Our forces did not kill civilians. What happened in Unity State, there was fighting between our forces and the government forces with their allies, Justice and Equality Movement, which decided to fight alongside the government of Salva Kiir in Juba. These are some of the casualties that we noticed. So they were purely military combatants who participated in the fighting between us and the government. So we did not target any civilian. If there were some of the civilians killed at all, this could have been crossfire. Because in crossfire, you would know which bullet killed a civilian.
I asked Dak to explain how the Justice and Equality Movement, who operate from North Sudan's western region of Darfur, reached Unity State. This was his reply.
They crossed the border from Sudan into Unity State on the invitation of President Salva Kiir. And when this internal conflict erupted in mid-December, they decided to fight alongside Salva Kiir's government against us.
Following the killing of the civilians in Bentiu, the United Nations has stepped up its patrols there. The spokesman for the United Nations mission in South Sudan, Joseph Contreras, says it was during one such patrol on Tuesday that UN troops stumbled on scenes with the dead bodies of military personnel and civilians.
Patrol spotted between 35 and 40 dead bodies along the roadsides that they were traveling. Most of the cadavers they saw were dressed in military uniforms. There were some corpses that were dressed in civilian clothing, but most were wearing military uniforms.
Contreras also updated the number of internally displaced persons, or IDPs, accommodated in Bentiu. He said the UN compound now shelters more than 22,000 people. Meanwhile, as rebel spokesman James Gadet Dak claimed that fighters of the Justice and Equality Movement were assisting South Sudan government troops in their battle against the rebels, South Sudan Foreign Affairs Minister Barnaba Marielle Benjamin alleged that Khartoum-backed Arab militia known as Janjaweed had entered Bentiu to fight alongside rebels supporting Riek Machar.
Republic of Sudan that allowing some of these Janjaweeds and others to come into Unity State and cause havoc, in fact, is unacceptable. But allowing the Janjaweed to come and attack like what they did in Bentiu with a lot of massacre, definitely this doesn't all go well.
Benjamin has claimed that North Sudan-backed Janjaweed militia were fighting with Riek Machar's rebels in Bentiu, was swiftly denied by the Khartoum government's information minister Ali Bilal. Speaking to me on a poor telephone line, Bilal tersely said the claim is baseless. Our government is not involved in the Bentiu fighting.
James Shimanyula reporting. The latest fighting came at a time when both the government of South Sudan and the rebels were preparing for peace talks in Addis Ababa later this week. So how likely is it that the talks will take place after the latest violence? I put that question to Peter Schumann, a former director of the UN mission in Southern Sudan.
I think what we are witnessing is a very, very dangerous situation. You have different groups fighting for whatever reasons and creating all sorts of counter-reactions. It seems to me that people are running amok. They are out of control, and they are reacting on rumors, on suspicions, because you cannot rely anymore on what is broadcasted on the radio, what is now going around. The political talks in Addis, even if they would resume tomorrow, I don't think would really stop the fighting and the killing. The situation seems to be really out of hand.
The rebels rejected accusations by both the UN and the government of South Sudan that they were responsible for the killings of innocent civilians in Bentiu. Instead, they accused government forces of carrying out the killings while retreating. What's your take on this?
As I said before, who are the rebels? I don't see a unified command anymore. Was it the rebels? Was it the government? I think the issue is a different one. The issue is that killing has become really the prime means of moving around. We have a completely new scenario, and I don't see a very clear structure where you can say, you know, if we bring this and this group to the table and we agree on something, whatever this agreement will not stop the fighting.
Is the international community sufficiently aware of the escalating situation in South Sudan, or it has been totally consumed by events happening in Ukraine?
Absolutely. I think especially now if I look at Germany, we now had sort of few reports on television, on radio, about the events after the killing in Bor, the massacres in Bor, the massacre in Pentiu. But we are warning for weeks and weeks already that the situation is constantly escalating. But you have referred to the situation in the Ukraine. There you have a parallel. The talks in Geneva did not result in compliance from whatever rebel opposition forces. And I think we will have a similar situation in South Sudan, where even if the top politicians reach an agreement under pressure from the international community, it does not mean that it will end the killing. The international community, in my assessment, is neither sufficiently aware nor sufficiently interested in what is happening in South Sudan.
With the robust mandate that the UN has in South Sudan, why wasn't it able to protect the civilians in Bentiu?
I think the UN has problems to protect themselves. The entire operation of protection of civilians is based on the assumption that there are regular forces under a central command, under a government command, and that you can sort of address security issues at the political level. Now we have a situation where the security situation is addressed at the Kalashnikov level. We have not seen a proper political response, neither from the Security Council nor from the bureaucracy in New York. We don't see a very clear strategy, a very clear initiative to get engaged in South Sudan.
I was speaking to Peter Schumann, former director of the UN mission in Southern Sudan.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
In Nigeria, parents of the girls abducted by the Boko Haram sect have appealed to the Islamists to release their daughters. The parents said more than 200 girls were still missing, a much higher figure than authorities said had been kidnapped. Last week, the Islamists stormed a remote boarding school in the northeast Nigerian town of Chibok and abducted the girls. I spoke to one of the parents, Mustafa Gana, who's very concerned about the whereabouts and fate of his daughter and her fellow pupils. Mustafa, a retired government soldier and father of eight, told me he was not happy with the way the authorities have handled the situation. But because of the poor quality of the line, we have voiced over his answers.
The latest information is that there's nothing that the government has done about these missing girls because the number provided is false information. The registered girls are 242, and out of these, the recovered ones are 32.
We understand you and other parents have joined in the search for your children. Is it because you are frustrated that the government isn't doing enough?
There is nothing which the government has done. They are giving false, fake information, and they did not do anything. The information which the Commissioner of Education is giving to the media is also not the right information.
It's not the right information.
What is the right information that you can share with us?
The right information about our missing girls is 210.
We understand some of the girls managed to escape. What kind of stories have they been telling you?
The story which they are telling us is that those people have done nothing to them. They have just told them to fetch water and whatsoever.
And how do you feel, you as a father, that your daughter is still missing and probably is going through these kind of hardships?
We should let the federal government do something. All the parents are not happy.
All of us, we are taking tears now.
What is your next step in case the government continues not to do as you wish?
The federal government must intervene because civilians cannot do anything with this kind of problem.
As a concerned father, if you had a chance to speak to the Boko Haram, what would you tell them?
If I had a chance to speak to them, I tell them it would be good for them to stop doing this kind of thing, because it's not good, because there is no religion which allows us to kidnap somebody or to kill somebody.
That was Mustafa Ghana, whose daughter is still in the hands of Boko Haram.
Africa on the move.
In our Africa on the Move slot this week, we head to Cameroon, where the International Police, or Interpol, in collaboration with police and civil society groups in the Central African region, have agreed to step up their efforts to stop the dumping of electronic waste in their countries. They argue that Africa has not got the means to destroy toxic electronic products, yet when these products are nearing the end of their useful lives, are dumped on the continent. From Yaounde, Moki Kinzeka reports.
Interpol's Regional Office for Central Africa, based in Yaounde, reports that 70% of computers and mobile phones sold in Africa have been used in developed countries. Cameroon's Environment Ministry's official in charge of toxic and hazardous waste, Lemnyoy William, says it is time African countries stop the importation of such second-hand material.
Will not continue to be a dump site for many electronic equipment that have gone out of use in many developed countries.
Delegates from Interpol's office and civil society groups meeting in Yaounde say electronic gadgets are being dumped in Africa because of stringent environmental laws in the United States and Europe. In most of these Western countries, it is much cheaper to export used electronic goods than to dispose them. But Central African countries are now hoping to change this practice. Interpol's Central African Regional Specialized Officer for Electronic Material, Conrad Atefo, told me that they have decided to involve the police in an ongoing continental effort to stop the importation of dangerous goods.
The police have a role of protecting the environment. Crimes are committed against the environment, like pollution, in all its forms. And the police are there to enforce laws and also to bring to justice defaulters. The police will be able to assist in carrying out investigations and helping in tracking down those who import equipment that are forbidden.
Leke Casimir, an expert on e-waste management, explained to me how dangerous some of the electronic material are and how they could end up in our bodies.
A computer is made up of about 1,000 elements. Those 1,000 elements are all toxic. When it becomes obsolete, it is dumped. And when it is dumped, these substances are washed off by rainwater. It filters into the water system and people carry the water and drink, and it affects them. Or women use that water from swampy areas to water vegetables that you and me go to the market and buy. It eats us up without us knowing.
The 2012 report by the UN Environment Programme says about 220,000 tons of electrical and electronic goods were shipped from the EU to West Africa.
Moke Kinseka reporting from Yaounde. And in our ongoing special series this week on South Africa, 20 years after the end of apartheid, we take you to Soweto. It is one of South Africa's oldest and impoverished suburbs. It was also one of the first black townships where renowned struggle icons like Nelson Mandela lived during the days of apartheid. And in recent years, the township has become a tourist destination, attracting both local and international visitors. As Tuzo Kumalo reports, local artists and residents say the legacy left by apartheid in Soweto has turned into a blessing in this case for them.
An evil and repulsive doctrine which says that a man's legal status, a man's...
The Apartheid Museum is one of the magnets for tourists visiting Soweto.
Color of his skin.
The big red-bricked building is full of pictures, videos and sound recordings of a time long gone by. 20 years after the end of apartheid, signs like Europeans only or dogs and blacks not allowed seem like a distant nightmare. Deus Mwale comes from Zambia. He recently attended a workshop in South Africa, but visiting Soweto is a must for him.
We are free, everybody's free. I mean, you feel proud and you're also like motivated to know that somebody could have a heart to the point of risking his own life and say, I can't accept until everybody's free, both black and white.
The famous Vilakazi Street is not far away from the Apartheid Museum. Nelson Mandela and Archbishop Desmond Tutu, both Nobel Prize laureates and freedom fighters, once lived here. Tourists from all over the world visit Vilakazi Street to see Mandela's house, which has been turned into a museum. German tourist Marvin Schotze explains why Soweto has become a magnet for tourists.
I've just been one time for a short period in Soweto now. I thought it was very nice here, and so I wanted to come back and have a deeper look inside Soweto. It's more about cultural things, I think. Meeting the people, yeah, that's what I take with me home.
Some residents along Vilakazi Street have converted their houses into restaurants and bars to provide food and beer to the growing number of tourists. Artists line up the street every day, selling all sorts of artifacts ranging from painted fabric, portraits, landscape drawing, sculpture, beads and wireworks. Pizzo Mushe, whose Ditao Zakoma Dance Theatre Group now makes a living by performing for tourists along Vilakazi Street, says Soweto tourism has provided them with a lifeline.
If it wasn't for this house and the Tutu house, I don't think there would be many people coming to watch what is happening in Vilakazi. Yes, by far, I think it's the best street in Soweto.
Nhlanhla Ngobese is the chairperson of an artifacts market. He says they are making a decent living from purchases made by both local and international visitors.
Some of them, they don't have tour guides. They ask us, can you come and tell us what was happening during 1976? Then I'll leave my shop just for a few minutes and explain for them. After that, maybe they thank me or just to tip me.
Tourism researcher Kukudlala says providing a home for apartheid sites and museum has indeed become a blessing in disguise for Soweto.
Soweto used to have that image of high rate of crime. Tourism came in. Most of the people are getting employed. They are selling crafts, becoming securities, tour guides and stuff.
While apartheid was officially abolished in 1994, its legacy continues to be a pillar of growth for Soweto.
Tuzo Kumalo with that report from Soweto. Don't forget to tune in daily to listen to Africa Link's ongoing special series on South Africa and, of course, other stories making headlines across Africa.
Making a difference.
And for making a difference this week, let's visit Goma Town in Eastern DRC. In recent years, the town has been synonymous with insecurity and underdevelopment, but one young art lover is trying to change its image by helping local artists to sell their products in the region. Mapendo Sumuni also dreams of selling the products on the international market for better profits. DW's Gaius Kowene met her in Goma and sent this report.
What is this?
This is Che Guevara. This is also artist. He called himself like a revolutionary. Yeah, it's really good.
I'm in an art gallery shop that opened a month ago in Goma, the capital of North Kivu province of Democratic Republic of Congo. Inside this shop, I see wooden carvings, jewelry, shoes and even bags made from local fabrics. Mapendo Sumuni, an art lover since childhood, owns and runs the shop. As a teenager, Mapendo was already organizing events enabling artists to gain visibility and sell their work. Now at 30, her full-time job with an international NGO does not prevent her from her passion for art. That passion is what drove her to establish Kivu Nuru, meaning lights from Kivu.
There's a lot of artists who are doing what they don't like because they don't find a way how they can live with art. You can find an artist who is a security guard and he draws so well, but he doesn't know how he can sell. And more an artist is selling, more the artist is creating beautiful and beautiful every day.
In order to fully achieve her vision, Mapendo meets artists from different fields every week to assess their creative works. Some of these artists, aided by Mapendo, have formed a committee to select the best works for their clients. But their work has always been challenging. For two decades, the Congolese army here has been conducting operations against armed groups responsible for serious human rights violations in the region. Fighting in the eastern DRC has seen scores of people killed, thousands of families displaced, children forced to take up arms, and thousands of women raped. When I ask Mapendo if she does not fear instability in the region may destroy all of her efforts, she became uneasy.
We cannot take this as a reason to not continue to live or to produce or to create. If we're not doing it now, when are we going to do it? In 10 years or 20 years?
As we continue to talk, three customers come to buy some art pieces. While choosing, I asked them what they thought of Kivu Nuru.
It's very nice, especially I like these very Congolese puppets, and I think presents a very good picture of what Goma is to the world.
Well, to the owner, I say keep going, keep continue with this. I think it's going to be very successful.
And the world,
the world, come to Goma and experience the creative side of Goma.
These praises from artists, clients, and friends push Mapendo to expand her vision. She wants to change the world's perception of Eastern DRC and sell to a global market.
The future I'm seeing is like we're going to produce more. We're going to have a lot of creation and people in the world going to see us as new generation of artists who want to go further and not as rappers. And why not selling our stuff outside in the international level? Why not?
Currently, Mapendo and her art gallery, Kivu Nuru, is building a network of collaborators with other artists of the Great Lakes region.
Gaius Kowene reporting from Goma. And before we leave you, here is a reminder of the stories that we've covered on the program. Rebels in South Sudan deny a UN report that says they killed hundreds of civilians after taking control of the oil-rich Bentiu town. Interpol, in collaboration with police in Central African countries, step up efforts to fight the dumping of electronic gadgets in Africa. We've also been hearing from one of the parents of the abducted girls in Nigeria, appealing to the Boko Haram Islamists to let his daughter and the other girls return to their homes. And with that, we come to the end of the program. For questions and comments, you can send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to +49 160 957 595 10, and we will read some of your comments right here on the program. Africa Link returns tomorrow at the same time, and I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn.